Welcome to the ITAD Talk Podcast with your host, Jeff Bittner.
Our guest this afternoon is Daniel Fry. He is the co-founder and CEO of Rocketansky. Am I saying that correctly?
You are, yep.
Okay. And he's a seasoned information security executive with a long track record of developing risk-based information security programs and leading all stages of technical and process development efforts. He's also the founder of Rocketansky, a passwordless authentication and user-focused security platform. Can you introduce yourself and give the listeners a little background on your education and work experience?
Let's see, so a little bit about me. So I was the quintessential 80s computer geek. Got my first computer when I was 10 and taught myself basic programming out of a manual that I picked up secondhand bookstore, and kind of experienced the dot-com boom 95 through like 2000, just working in startups. My first one was at a company called Synchrologic. They started out of ATDC off 14th Street here in Atlanta. Was there a couple of years working in IT as I worked my way through college, and then got involved with a company named Crestone in around 2000, 2001. And their idea was to move away from consulting services for ERP applications and do ERP hosting. And this was, you know, pre-cloud, like, you know, old school data center with racks of servers. And so I ended up staying there about 20 years. I went through, you know, being like the IT administrator to managing the Windows server tech team, managing the network team. And then in 2005, kind of had this epiphany where, you know, I thought something called cybersecurity was going to be a big career move one day. And so I talked to my boss at the time and said, hey, you know, I think the cybersecurity thing is going to be really important. I'm really interested by it. Can I focus my job entirely on cybersecurity? And he said, yeah, sure. So I hired a manager to replace me on the network side, and basically just was a team of one focused on security. So fast forward 15 years. I left the company last year in 2020 as chief information security officer. Had built out a team of about 10 folks and just kind of bootstrapped the entire security function. I mean, everything that goes into being a CISO, you know, compliance, security, audits, risk, security operations center. So it was kind of an interesting adventure for 15 years.
Wow, nice. So what are some of the biggest lessons from managing the 10,000 cubic foot warehouse at TermNet?
You know, it's an interesting question because I think a lot of people would say, what does managing or working in a warehouse have to do with working in IT? And you would be surprised at how well you begin to learn about business functions and how they matter. So, you know, when you're working in a large warehouse, right, it's very regimented. Like, you've got to be able to go retrieve a box or a piece of paper out of one of those boxes every time with, you know, 100% accuracy. And so, you know, you develop, you know, kind of assembly line processes, you know, how data flows, you know, and in this case, you're talking about piece of paper, but, you know, that carries over to information security. Like, you know, how are you going to, you know, triage events? How are you going to track your workflow? You know, you have to have 100% accuracy when you're going to, you know, investigate an incident, how you get the data you need. So there was a lot of, you know, things just around organizational structure, you know, building really good, repeatable processes that I learned, you know, back when I was a teenager working in a warehouse that carried over, you know, into my 40s running a cybersecurity team.
So as far as when you're doing the warehouse and trying to make that function better, did you guys use any kind of lean management processes?
You know, maybe. And you know, there was nothing really called lean back then, at least not at our level. You know, I think it was much more around process optimization. So, you know, it was, how can I get my job done faster? And I think that a lot of that really just comes into, you know, really understanding the flow of information and who needs it and how you capture it. So, you know, I think back to those days, you know, where, you know, it was kind of pre-internet, you know, we had a small computer running over in the corner, running Lotus 1-2-3, and we would key in, you know, a bunch of data into that thing, and then turn it into a alphabetically a date sorted spreadsheet, and then print that off, and then hand it out to everybody that was going to go pull tickets, which was a vastly superior way than just kind of haphazard going and pulling them as their requests came in. So, you know, things like developing batch processes and how to sort data, triage data, you know, while it wasn't necessarily lean, it was certainly a way to identify incoming work, how to process optimize it, and then take that work to deliver a superior product.
Nice. That's good. Another question. In your bio, it mentions that you manage migrations of existing systems at Synchronologic. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, Synchronologic was kind of interesting. So it was a software development company, early, mid-90s. So we had... they were writing basically database synchronization software. But the way that we developed some of those applications was everybody kind of had a test lab underneath their desk. So everybody had, you know, 5 or 6 computers, and this was pre-virtualization days. So what we had to do is, if we got a new developer, figure out how to branch code and migrate systems. So we, you know, built out an unattended install process, and, you know, again, going back to kind of the value chain is figuring out how we were able to take, you know, standalone equipment, clone it, move it at scale, because we were hiring new developers all the time. So.
Nice. It also said that you serve as a purchasing coordinator for their IT department. Did you have anything to do with the disposal of IT assets back then?
Sort of. I mean, we were growing so fast that we never really threw anything out. So, you know, disposal meant moving it from somebody's desk to whoever the new hire's desk was. So the new guy owns the oldest computer. Right. But yeah, I mean, you know, back then it was, we didn't throw much out.
So you touched on this a little bit earlier, but I know I was having a little bit of feedback. I figured out what it was. My cell phone was too close to the recording. But how did you get started at Cedar Crestone?
It was actually a friend of mine that I worked with at Synchronologic. So he and I met in college. We were both in computers working intern jobs. So he came and worked at Synchronologic with me. And then after he graduated, he went and started working at Crestone. Picked me up one day and said, "Hey, they're looking for a Windows administrator. Are you interested?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." So I went and interviewed. They hired me the same day. The interview went awesome. Probably my best interview that I had ever done.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, you know, they were asking me all kinds of technical questions, and I mean, it was clear that not only did I know the information, my biggest challenge was answering fast enough. Because it was like, you know, I was rattling stuff off, and it went great. Like, I just clicked with those guys immediately. It was perfect. It was like a perfect first date.
Now, what part of the country are you in?
Based out of Atlanta. I've been here, I don't know, 34 years at this point.
Okay. And then have you pretty much been working at the office through the COVID, or you've been doing work from home as well, or?
No, entirely remote. So I left Cedar in February of 2020, so a couple weeks right before COVID hit. We started Rakitansky beginning of March, so like literally the same week that COVID all of a sudden became a thing. So we, you know, kind of locked ourselves in the house for a year, me and my two co-founders. Yeah, so we were entirely remote. I think there was one, we got our MVP built, or I should say prototype built, in September of last year, so September 2020, and we were like, all right, we're going to risk it and have a cookout. So we cooked some barbecue on a grill, and that was, I think, the first time that we had seen each other in about 9 months.
Wow. Yeah, it's kind of nice to kind of get back out there again after a long time at home.
It is. It is. It's interesting because, you know, we got our MVP put together in September 2021, so about 12 months after getting the prototype working. So it's interesting, you know, now that we're starting to, you know, work on our fundraising and recently got into Creative Destruction Lab, which is an incubator based out of Georgia Tech. We're doing a lot more networking. And so a lot of people say, you know, do you want to, you know, do Zoom or would you rather meet for a cup of coffee? And, you know, I'm like, man, I absolutely the coffee because I'm looking for an excuse to get out of the house. So,
for sure. So what are some of the most notable ways the data security landscape has shifted for you since you started?
You know, I've been in it so long that there have been so many different changes. You know, I think back to, you know, 2010, 2009-ish. At the time, two-factor authentication was like the big shift, right? Where you're moving away from an insecure password to two-factor. And, you know, you were waiting on, you know, like PIN codes or, you know, you download an app like Duo or, you know, Microsoft Authenticator or Google's Authenticator. And that was kind of like the new way to do things. And it's interesting now, fast forwarding, you know, roughly 10 years later, a lot of people are kind of tired of that. They're like, hey, wait a minute, you know, passwords were and are insecure. Two-factor is just really a big pain to use. So what's easier, simpler, better? Like how do we start from scratch and build a different type of authentication? And that was actually where Tom, Paul, and I, as co-founders, got together and figured this was something that we wanted to tackle. You know, I think, you know, you rewind 10 years ago, the biggest thing at the time was, you know, viruses and worms and, you know, there was some hacking and stuff, but the ransomware threat wasn't the same way that it is today. You know, it seems like every other day there's another breach, and we used to have breaches back then, but I think it's a much different type of breach now than it was then.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like it's getting more intense. You're hearing it more and more.
Yeah, I think the reason that I think that it's more intense is it's cyber crime is a big business. You know, it used to be something that was done, you know, the teenager from his basement was kind of the, image in a broad stroke that people would hold up. And then it, you know, turned into, you know, nation states. And now, I mean, it's actually business. I mean, people build malware and they're, you know, leasing malware like a SaaS service in the same way that a legitimate company would lease their software out. You know, so there are threat actors that are, their goal is to lower the bar so that, you know, anybody can be a cyber criminal. And at the same time, you've got on the opposite end of the spectrum, you've got nation state hacking that they have infinite more resources and infinite more ability than most private companies to defend themselves against. And I think that's, you know, companies are kind of stuck in the middle where you're kind of beset on all sides.
And don't forget, the best way to support ITAD content is to rate and like the show on iTunes, Google, Spotify, or anywhere you might listen.